This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Monday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And it's lovely. I had a lovely weekend. Did you have a good weekend? I know you had some family stuff, but overall, was it pretty good?
Yeah, we it was kind of a 36-hour trip up to Seattle. We left Friday morning for memorial service for a cousin that unexpectedly passed away. Of course, that was a lot of fun, a lot of bonding, some tears shed and, some very heartfelt speeches from family members and friends. But then on Saturday morning, we actually went down to the Seattle Aquarium.
Oh, how was that?
It was actually very fun. My little one was enthralled with everything.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Mm-hmm. Oh, the baby. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And all the big kids had a great time. We went down and ate at Ivers out down there and, kind of did the touristy thing, which do when you live there.
So what was it like down there? I mean, we hear the horror stories. How was it?
So overall, in the touristy areas, it wasn't bad. It was everything you'd expect. Mm-hmm. But then they actually were doing some major road work on I-5 northbound.
Oh, gosh.
So virtually to get on the freeway heading north, you had to get onto the express lanes, which then meant you drove through some neighborhoods and some other areas on, around downtown to get to the express lane entrances, which then you kind of see the tent, So the tourist areas are actually very clean, very well kept. It's big time different than it was years ago. They've taken down the Alaskan Way Viaduct. So there's no longer that kind of covered area throughout the waterfront where a lot of problems congested, I guess is kind of the way to say it.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Mm-hmm. So, a lot like Portland, it's the places where they want people to go, they do a decent job of keeping it clean. The areas where they don't care about people going are still kind of the dirty tents everywhere, garbage everywhere.
Where their taxpayers have to live. I have to be in Seattle in a couple of weeks. We're doing a big Alaska cruise, so we're going out of port. I think it's 66 out there. Mm-hmm. So I haven't been to Seattle in a very, very long time. Very long time. So I'll be curious to see what it's like. And I know when there was a little bit of break in the weather too this weekend. It was nice. Got some rain and some cooler temperatures, but it's starting to jack back up. But all in all, it was nice to have a weekend. I'm glad you got a little extra, and I'm sure that must have been good. Those bittersweet things, it's like it's a sad occasion, but you get to see a lot of family that you haven't seen in a while. Mm-hmm. So that's always kind of nice, so it kind of balances out the emotion.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah. And a very well done kind of, they did it at the McMinimins in Bothell. So,
oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. So big room, jam-packed full of people. Speaking of the little one, I think she made friends with everybody in the room.
Well, she's about as cute as can be. She's so adorable. I mean, I'm Italian and I the biting of the finger, and she's one where it's like, oh my gosh, too cute. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, kind of speaking of McMinimins, I don't know. They serve wine there. Today's National Pinot Noir Day. I heard Warren mention that this morning. I like a good Pinot Noir, so I'll celebrate today.
Well, yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. And, then you add in that it's National Fajitas Day, and I'm kind of going, maybe we start combining some national days, fajitas for dinner with some wine.
And then it's National Ice Cream Pie Day. I think we've got our menu covered, Hunter. I think we're good to go. Why don't we just sign off now and go eat and drink?
That's right. Dinner is served.
I love people who say, is it fajitas? No, it's fajitas. And I always love them when you get them at the table because it's this big sizzling symphony of meat. Mm. It's fantastic.
I say that just to annoy my mother.
It sounds so mildly sort of ew. It's like people who don't like the word, what is it, moist? people and their weird word things that they don't like.
There's a long list of words that can set people off in the wrong way.
It's too funny, too funny. All right, well, on this day in history, this is interesting. In 1872, Montgomery Ward's published the first mail order catalog. It was just one page.
How boring for the kids of 1872. I remember the Sears catalog in the 80s, and I'm sitting there going, you could spend a week going through that thing.
The Christmas Wish Book. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I still get, you get kind of giddy on that. Woo.
Yeah. All right. In 1920, the 19th Amendment was ratified.
Gee, was that a good thing or a bad thing? Opinions vary on that one. 1953, a tornado picks up four cows in Stearns County, Minnesota, and sets them down unharmed. That's amazing.
That's a cownado.
I bet they had fun once they realized it was like, oh, cool, let's do it again, do it again.
In 1988, on this day, the GOP nominated Bush Quayle at the convention in New Orleans.
Wow, old Dan Quayle. Is he still kicking around?
I think so.
Poor guy. He never lived that potato thing down. He never lived it down. It was really unfortunate. And apparently he had a card or something, and it was miswritten on the card. And it stuck with him for his whole life. There's no E on the end of potato.
Poor guy. Go ahead. I'll let you take it.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm still on the potato. Potato, patata. Soviet hardliners, this is in 1991, they launched a coup against Mikhail Gorbachev. Ooh.
All right. And how about this one? In 2011, gold hit a record high of $1,826 an ounce. And today it's only at $3,413.
Only? I keep hearing grumblings. Gold is one that I watch because, you know, as gold goes up, other things go down. Things get dicey. A lot of people are saying you maybe see gold at around $5,000 an ounce. And they always hear on a lot of the talk radio, invest in gold, diversify your portfolio, have some of your assets in gold and silver. Always a good idea. Silver's a little more affordable. I think it's right around $34-35 an ounce right now. So anyway, yeah, cool. Interesting stuff happening around the world on this day.
So let's address this story you sent me. I believe it was on last Friday.
Which one are we talking
about? Oregon being one of the worst states to move to, the analysis says. Because I'm just sitting here looking at this thing going, I'm not surprised, but I am a little surprised that Washington was one of the more popular, the better states to move to.
Yeah, I know. I too. I've got it. It's a coin six. Oregon, it's so sad because it really just kind of tanked in about the last decade. Remember, it was still in like the aughts. It was still a destination. Portland was still considered cool and weird. Portlandia was on. I loved that show. It was hilarious. It was funny. But there's a new analysis. Consumer Affairs recently ranked Oregon the fourth worst state, down from it. So, and Washington outperformed it because Washington has insane stuff going on as well. A lot of the gun laws and things like that. But again, not a lot of people are necessarily... that's not their do or die issue for them. Mm-hmm. So Oregon scored poorly for its affordability, safety, economy, education, and access to healthcare. None of those things are surprising. The states that ranked worse than Oregon are, surprise, California, Louisiana, and New Mexico. And then the best states to move to, and again, no real surprises here, are Utah, New Hampshire, Idaho, and Virginia. And Washington, D.C. was omitted from the rankings because it ain't a state. It's a district.
It would have been like 51, 54, 58.
So this is interesting, though. It is so expensive, and we keep hearing more and more about, you know, tolling and taxing this and taxing that. Of course, there's, you know, taxing your lash together or a fee on your lash together inner tubes if you want to just have a float to relax from all the other taxes that are being thrown down on you. But now you got to pay for that too.
Yeah, well, and citing the environmental issues here in Oregon is one of the reasons it's so low is what's almost appalling when you figure that we spend a ton of money on our environment. We're told we need to, you know, literally bend over backwards because of the environment stuff and this and that. But guess what? It's all come full circle because the biggest fear is the wildfires and the drought. Two things that we could do a better job of managing, and yet Oregon doesn't for all the money we spend on the environment.
Yeah, and absolutely with the fire season. Droughts, water mitigation, water storage and things like that. And of course, crime. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in Seattle and you didn't see a lot of it. I mean, Portland has a terrible reputation. People just are not coming to Portland. Your conferences are not going to be there. All the stuff that brings in business, and that has a real ripple effect out into the rest of the community, especially the business community. It's again, I hate to overuse this term, but doom spiral really does seem to fit here. Until somehow you can yank Oregon up by its bootstraps and change the leadership. Ugh.
Yeah, well, and especially when you can literally look. I mean, like I said, we were in Washington over the weekend. Gas prices are probably 40 to 50 cents more per gallon than they are in Oregon.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, I'm kind of going, they do a better job, I think, of you know, mitigating some of these circumstances. Like I said, is when you're downtown, it actually looks relatively clean. It is, mm-hmm. it is a tourist area. I mean, it really yeah. is. Whereas even Portland, when you're downtown by the Moda Center and this and that, they don't do as good a job of keeping the riffraff and the problems away.
Yeah, they really don't. And again, that perception and perception, really, if you're perceived as not being safe and being dirty and ugly and unsafe, it's really hard to break that. And they've kind of cemented that in. I don't know. And especially when you've got, what do we have? They liken themselves as socialist superheroes on the Portland City Council, mm-hmm. and they just keep doubling down on bad ideas. So speaking of that, we're going to take a break and come back because it's happening at the state level as well. Doubling down on bad ideas, but she's going to fight. Oh, yes, she is. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Home Comfort.
So did you know that the state of Oregon has sued the Trump administration 36 times?
Only? I'm impressed it's only 36.
So every time... Who pays for that?
Us as taxpayers.
Taxpayers. So you get this little fist shaking at the, you know, old, weird old looking lady shakes her fist at the cloud. You know, fight. She's going to fight against this, doubling down. Our friends over at Oregon Catalyst, the headline today, 15 million grants lost as Oregon won't budge on sanctuary state. The Trump administration is now requiring some federal grants to require that the state recipient not impede law enforcement over immigration enforcement over wanted criminals. Oregon is a sanctuary state which blocks local governments from cooperating with federal immigration agents. This includes federal victims of crime grants. One estimate puts a total at $15 million. Right in Salem, I know you have the Salem PD will not cooperate that. Immigration and this stuff is a federal issue. Mm-hmm. It is one of the very few things. So the state is wrong here. And how many people, I don't know if she took a poll out there, how many people stand by her decision to fight on this?
Well,
but there stands to be a loss of a lot of federal money.
Yeah, well, and you have to look at what this really breaks down to, because the most common occurrence, and, you know, across blue cities in particular, is when they have someone in custody for another crime.
Yeah.
They are, rather than notify ICE or hold them in detention until ICE comes and picks them up, they are trying to release them out the back door.
Right.
And try and avoid ICE. And then, of course, once you do that, now you're in an uncontrolled environment. Who knows right. how many lives, innocent and ICE and whoever this person is, you are all now putting at a risky scenario.
Yeah,
and you go
out into the community.
That's the most common occurrence of these governments not being willing to work with ICE. And it's just they're trying to literally harbor fugitives.
I know.
Out
they're
the back
aiding
door.
And abetting.
Mm-hmm.
It's criminal. It's disgusting. And they have no care at all. The other side of that issue is the victims of people. Did you see that video of that truck driver, that illegal truck driver who decided, I'm just going to make a U-turn in the middle of the freeway? And these people are, how did he get a driver's license? Oregon, again, is another one that, because even though the voters, except for Multnomah County, they said no to driver's license for illegals, the legislature was like, yeah, we don't care, and they did it. And then you see something like that, and then I saw another one this morning, I think, I don't remember what state it was in, another one where these people, it's terrifying to be out on the freeways now.
Yeah.
You've got these people that clearly should not be behind the wheel of a big rig.
Yeah, well, the one that pops in my head, I think I saw it a couple of months ago, was... virtually one going at high speed down the freeway just lost control and was just blowing cars apart. And you just go, how are we allowing people that shouldn't be driving a rig like that? I mean, I'm sitting here going, if I was driving a rig like that, you know how many drug tests and all these
yeah.
all these steps I would have to go through to be behind that wheel?
I've had a commercial driver's license because, I mean, as you know, I drove a school bus for many years. You have to have a CDL. And yes, you have to be drug tested and you have to go through training and it takes a while and you've got a lot of responsibility. And this idiot decides to do a U-turn and there's this family, or I don't know who was in the minivan, but clearly they're not with us anymore. Horrifying, just right under. There was no time to stop. So I'm sorry, but these sanctuary states, they have blood on their hands on this. And so the fact that this governor is saying that we're going to side with illegal aliens and people that are breaking the law and we're going to put everybody else at risk, to hell with you all, is so maddening. So, and then now, maybe are people going to get up in arms if federal money just starts disappearing?
I would hope so. I think the problem is as we know here in Oregon, rather than do the right thing and keep that federal money flowing, they are going to fight back and at the expense, aka find ways to tax the taxpayers to right. make up the difference.
Yep. Yep. And so, you know, the giant sucking sound of everybody leaving Oregon is just going to get it's going to ratchet up. Another headline over at Oregon Catalyst. President Trump has given Kotek Tuesday a Tuesday deadline over immigration. This is from Saturday. President Trump's Justice Department sent a letter to the governors of certain sanctuary states, including Oregon Governor Tina Kotek, warning them to stop impeding law enforcement efforts over arresting illegal migrants. From the article, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi's letter read in part, quote, "You are hereby notified that your jurisdiction has been identified as one that engages in sanctuary policies and practices that thwart federal immigration enforcement to the detriment of the interests of the United States. This ends now. By Tuesday, August 19th, 2025, please submit a response to this letter that confirms your commitment to complying with federal law and identifies the immediate initiatives you are taking to eliminate laws, policies, and practices that impede federal immigration enforcement." The letter also reads, quote, "For too long, so-called sanctuary jurisdiction policies have undermined this necessary cooperation and obstructed federal immigration enforcement, giving aliens cover to perpetrate crimes in our communities and evade the immigration consequences that federal law requires." About time. That's good.
Okay, so I fully suspect that this letter will not be, "We are going to comply, we're going to do this, we're going to be a part of the solution instead of part of the problem." I fully expect the letter will say nothing like that, but I would love to see the response that she does send. I'm hoping that's made public.
I don't know why it wouldn't be made public.
Well, because I'm assuming it's going to be the written equivalent of a middle finger.
Yeah. And then my question on the other side of it, if she doesn't respond by Tuesday, if she just sits there and goes, "Yeah, no, I'm not doing this," what are the consequences? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, are there consequences? I was just reading, and again, squishy Republicans in Texas, all the Democrats are now back. Mm-hmm. Any of them lose their seats? Any consequences?
No.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
There never is. And until these people that are, you know, breaking laws under the guise of being part of government are actually held accountable, how can any of us have any confidence in the system?
Yeah, it's eroding at all levels. And I'm in Texas would have been a perfect case. I mean, Governor Abbott was making noises about sending out law enforcement to bring them back, do their job. Of course, Oregon Democrats were, "Go, you guys go. When the Republicans do it, we hate it. But when we do it, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Totally fine."
Yeah. Well, when the Republicans do it, we got to come up with a way of punishing them. When we right. do it, it's okay. Don't worry about that.
Where was that other one? Because there's other consequences. Yeah. Just real quick. We got, what, about a minute. Oregon could lose that sixth congressional seat. Mm-hmm. Because of redistricting and what's happening with that. Oregon stands to lose that, which, what, we've only had it for, what, a couple of cycles here?
That's what happens when your population is leaving the state in mass numbers.
Yeah, for Idaho, Washington, and Arizona, and that's going to change the dynamic. That one encompasses a lot of Salem, the Salem area. Who's in that one now? Is it Janelle Bynum?
I think so. Yeah.
Or is it Andrea Salinas? I don't know. It said it would combine.
It looks like a lot of that. So Val Hoyle, Bynum, and Salinas would probably be merged into one seat. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, that interesting. Could get and a little again, wild.
it could. And you look at the numbers and the makeup, and somebody put that out there as far as Republican representatives. 41% in the state of Oregon, and mm-hmm. there's one.
Yeah.
One congressional Republican from Cliff Bentz in CD2. So it's kind of weird, you know? It doesn't, what's going on here? Gerrymandering, do you think?
No, it just doesn't seem like that kind of representation, because realistically, if we've got five seats, we should hold two as Republicans, right?
You'd think.
Logic would state that, and, you know, but let's get upset about Texas doing it, you know, to help the Republicans.
Yeah, we can't have that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Yeah. All right, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour, and we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news, so come on back on the other side.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
How are you? Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us on this beautiful August Monday. So, headline over at PJ Media. Trump is about to go nuclear against mail-in voting. Lots and lots and lots of people are cheering this on. I kind of was like, no, that's a state issue. How the people vote is a state issue.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, and that's the thing. I understand why conservative social media influencers are excited about this, even some of the talk show hosts, whatever. I understand the excitement of the idea of let's get rid of it, because it is easy to manipulate. Fraud is real. My biggest worry with the mail-in voting in my lifetime has been, is there a way they can identify that I'm a registered Republican and my ballot tends to just kind of fall off a table? You know,
I know there were conspiracy theories going, you know, there's a little secret code in that little circle on the envelope and it shows you this, that, and the other thing. And no, once it comes out of the envelope and it is separated, the ballot is a ballot is a ballot. And Oregon has had it for many, many, many years. I don't see it going anywhere. I know there's an effort right now in Oregon to end vote by mail, but people really like it. It's really convenient for those that do vote it. I don't see it necessarily going anywhere. And I also don't see this as something that the president should be telling the states how to conduct their elections.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, is the way states conduct their elections is done at the state level. It is not under the purview of the federal government.
Right.
There are ways that the Trump administration, the federal government, could get involved with the way voting is done. Number one is the requirement of to the states maybe having forcing a federal level audit every couple of years for the voter rolls would be one. Voter ID is another. I mean, we require to get on an airplane, to open a bank account.
Yeah,
all these
everything.
Things. Yeah, it is required. So the excuse that, poor people and minorities can't get it. No, that's a crock. So that's the thing, is there's way the federal government could, especially in federal elections, take a big stand in that way. But yeah, regulating on how you vote isn't one of them.
And honestly, I mean, Oregon is ridiculous with using postmarks, but again, that is the state. And I really think, number one, voter apathy is an issue that needs to be dealt with at the statewide level. And that's sort of a party thing. Motor voter really should just go away. That's rife. I mean, everybody's automatically, you should have to opt in a little teeny bit of heavy lifting if you want to vote, meaning sign up. Versus everybody's just, here you go, you're eligible.
Well, the state of Oregon has shown it. Remember, it's like they did a minor audit and they found, you know, at first it was only a couple of dozen people got registered to vote when they shouldn't have. And then it became 300. And I think the number approached over 1,000 when they kind of stopped updating on what they were finding.
Yeah. So he's going to be, I guess he had an all caps Truth Social. And again, I understand the sentiment behind this. I really, really do. I don't disagree with that at all. I just kind of got an executive order to help bring honesty to the 2026 midterm elections. Again, I think that's a bit of an overreach from that level, from the federal government level. And again, if you've got Governor Kotek shaking her fist and saying no on, you know, the immigration stuff, who thinks that these blue states are going to roll over and go, okay. We're going to have, and again, how do you do that in the time for 2026? Mail-in voting in Oregon has been around for decades.
Yeah.
There's no polling places. There isn't anything set up to do that. So I'm a little like, I mean, this sounds good and a lot of people like it and I get the sentiment. And again, it just went on steroids with COVID. And I think a lot of COVID was certainly maneuvered to make that happen in all the states because, you know, emergency. Mm-hmm. And that's where it got dug into a lot of states. But, you know, in Oregon, people voted for it. And I have to say, I think a lot of people like it. So,
yeah, well, it's for the convenience factor. Like you said, is with motor voter, you don't even have to register to vote. They just do it for you automatically. So now this is the next logical step of the ballot is mailed to you and you can either take it and fill it out or just put it in your mail stack and let it rot, you know?
Right. And he talks about also voting machines. Oregon doesn't have voting machines. They're paper ballots that you fill in the bubble. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's good and bad. A lot of it, though, is apathy and if people don't trust it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I guess this is going to happen. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's.
But again, I don't disagree with the sentiment at all.
This one, I literally sit here and say, if this comes to fruition, Oregon is going to sue the Trump administration for the 37th time. And probably the left blue states are going to win this one because this is not part of you know, the Constitution at the federal level. This is definitely a state issue on how its citizens vote.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, okay. Speaking of mail, we got to talk about this. I saw the videos over the weekend. The Hodge twins put out a post today, and Tommy Lahren, who is a talking head, I think, over at Fox, she said, "I'm sorry, but I don't get the outrage over the male cheerleaders. Who cares? At least they're not pretending to be girls. Male cheerleaders are not a new thing. Oh, well, it's not necessary for conservatives to be outraged over absolutely everything. It's inconsequential." I kind of agree with that, but then I saw the video. Now, male cheerleaders to me are the burlier guys that hold up the pyramids, that the cheerleaders, the girls, they're there for muscle. They're there for lifting and all this. These guys were dancing. In fact, they were prancing around looking like women. It was weird. Mm-hmm. So I disagree with her. The Hodge twins said there that there is a difference. They're like, yeah, the power lifts and the stunts. And these guys were trying to look like girls and they were mimicking women's movements and mannerism. It made me really uncomfortable to watch.
Well, and that's where the Tommy Lahren kind of quote comes in. It's like, yeah, they weren't pretending to be girls. They weren't going out with long hair and skirts, but their mannerisms were pretending to be the girls. So, yeah, I'm kind of like male cheerleaders. Yeah, they've been around for a long time.
Forever. Yeah.
But they were the ones that are supporting. I've been to tons of college football games, NFL games, where you're seeing cheerleaders. There are males there. They hold up the girls. They, you know, they're virtually, to a certain extent, especially when they come up into the stands, I look at them as kind of the bodyguards of the women. And it's like, that's the role of what you'd expect out of a male cheerleader.
Yes. And, you know, these two guys are on this team. Well, what two women lost an opportunity because of these two guys?
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's just weird. And the mannerisms were so exaggerated. Where on the women, the dance moves look cool. Mm-hmm. On the guys, it was like, you know, it's like Uncanny Valley. It's kind of right, but kind of not. And it's hard to put your finger on.
Yeah. What was the Kirsten Dunst cheerleading movie? Bring It On.
Uh-huh.
You know, they had male cheerleaders in that stuff. And their job was to support the females as they did their routines. And did their tumbling and did all that stuff. So, yeah, you know, it's like there's a place for them, but this probably isn't quite it.
I don't remember the name of the team. I want to say Kansas City. Does that sound right?
It
was
might
like
be.
Purple and yellow.
No, that would.
Again, I don't follow all that. I don't follow this.
Yeah, I don't even. I literally glanced at this stuff at the end of last week and put it out of my mind, I think.
Yeah, it just struck me as weird. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see if this catches on. I don't know. What is the NFL doing? What are you doing?
Well, we all know what they're doing.
I know. All right. This one I saw this morning. And he's one of my favorite. He's probably my favorite talk show host. Jesse Kelly. I love him. He tweeted out this morning because this is so weird. The New York Post put most Gen Z job seekers have brought a parent to an interview and half of them had them talk to the hiring manager. In a million years, I would absolutely die of cringe shame if I ever even thought to do this. And then on the other side of it, what are the parents thinking to do this?
Talk about smothering parenting.
Oh my God.
I am just like, I have two adult children and the last thing I am going to do is go to a job interview with them, hold their hand. I will recommend them to someone I know that owns
sure.
a business.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
I will talk them up all day long, but I am not going to go to a job interview. I am not going to help them call out sick. I'm not going to. Yeah, none of that stuff. It
no.
is appalling. It's like you've got to learn to stand on your own 2 feet at some point. So these parents of these kids obviously are keeping them shadowed in their basement to a certain extent.
They're not doing them any problems. So Jesse tweeted out 5 simple steps, which I think both you and I, Hunter, have done this, and we've interviewed for many jobs, won and lost them. Number one, show up early. Woohoo! What a concept. Be a little early. I always like to be early. I hate being late. I'd rather be 10 minutes early and have to cool my heels in the waiting room.
I always joke when I first moved from Seattle to Central Oregon, now 20 years ago, I was so used to the traffic in the Seattle area where it took, you put a 30-minute drive time into your grocery shopping list. I mean, that literally, you planned on that. So I would literally leave and drive all the way across Bend, giving myself 30 minutes or more, and I am there 25 minutes early. I mean, that was how bad.
Yeah, exactly. So show up early. That's an easy one. Number two, don't bring mommy.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a no-brainer, but don't bring mommy. Number three, wear a suit. Mm-hmm. How many times, I actually was part of an interview process not too recently, and the interviewee showed up in jeans and dirty muck boots and a kind of a t-shirty top. I'm like, really? And that person did not get the job, by the way.
No, no. I'm sitting there going, a suit... definitely for a kind of a
white collar,
kind of a job. If you're doing something, I mean, I can see, like, my son, we've put him in slacks, dress shoes, and a button up shirt.
Perfect for most jobs. Yep. This one, number four, we worked hard, and a lot of times scouts and things like that, we instilled this in our son, and he, to this day, it has served him well. Number four, shake hands firmly and look them in the eye. I cannot tell you how grossed out I get when I get some sloppy, wet, cold, clammy, limp-wristed handshake from somebody in their 20s or 30s or whatever, and they don't make eye contact. I'm like, oh, it's just, ugh.
Well, that's literally social engagement number one. And unfortunately, we've spent a number of years recently telling people don't have social engagement, don't make physical contact, hide behind your screen and wear a mask.
My handshake, when I shake hands with people, it's full hand, and I don't try to crush anybody. You know who had the most strongest grip of anybody I've ever shaken hands with was the late Jerry Frank. You're like, ow, hi, ow. He had a wicked handshake. Number five, this one, shut your freaking mouth and listen to what the interviewer wants to talk about. So, it's not all about you.
So we see this in comedy sketches on occasion. Yeah. Where the interviewee is literally directing the conversation towards the interviewer. And you think that that's just a comedy sketch, but it sounds like it is happening regularly at job interviews.
Yeah. Well, asking, you're in an initial job interview, what are the benefits? What are this? How much time off? You're not going to get the job. What are the vacation schedules?
Yeah, I'm going to need every other Tuesday off for mental health days. And I'll need to make sure there is a safe space within the building in case things get a little stressful during the day.
Yes. And the old time blindness. So don't expect me to show up on time. So,
well, yeah, you have to stop and get your double decaf mochaccino. And...
I mean, it does not bode well. And I kind of feel bad, because clearly if the parents think it's okay to accompany them to these meetings, their parents are not doing them any favors at all. But basically those 5 items, and he ends with, you'll get the job. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you will. Because, the interview skills, nobody likes a job interview. Job interviews suck, no matter what side of the table you're on. Because even when you're doing the interviewing, you're probably going through, rote questions. And what do? Do you smile? Do you not smile? So they're not a lot of fun. But these 5 basic things. And number 4, man, shake hands for and look them in the eye. Practice shaking hands.
Mm-hmm.
Practice.
Yeah. That is definitely a lost art, I think, on the next generation.
I think so too. All right, let's go ahead and take our last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Perlin Mill and Cozy's New York Deli.
All right, so I'm counting down to a fun vacation coming up, but I think a lot of people are counting down to Katie Bar the Door, a special legislative session.
Deep breaths.
Yes, serenity now. Special session shouldn't punish Oregonians is the headline from our friends over at OregonCatalyst.com. But it is. This whole thing has felt punitive all the way through. I didn't get my way, so I'm going to make your life miserable.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, the Oregon Department of Transportation has a $350 million deficit, and if we don't secure that funding, she's going to lay off 500 ODOT employees.
Think about those ODOT employees that have been in kind of limbo all summer long, not knowing whether they're going to have a job or not. I mean, it's just cruel.
Well, and because what we know is that they're not talking about top-down cuts. They're talking about street-level cuts.
Right.
Those are the ones that are on the chopping block. The ones that, you know, do the work of clearing our streets and fixing our potholes. Those are the ones on the chopping blocks, not the DEI division sitting in a, you know, nice office building, cushy six-figure salaries and, you know, just making sure we're all doing what we're supposed to do.
Wasn't that like a $30 million line item? Representative Rushke called that out very early on, saying, hey, start cutting here.
Yep. But we saw it with the cuts in the Salem-Keizer School District. Mm-hmm. We see that. They you know, heavy down at the hands and the feet on the streets and light on the bureaucracy.
And then again, to do this over the long holiday weekend, the last, you know, hurrah of summer to make all these people come in, not to mention all their staff. So nobody gets a holiday. So just to continue to sort of pour salt in the wound. So it's scheduled for Friday, August 29th. Her goal is to raise the gas tax by 6 cents, increase vehicle registration fees by $42, and raise title fees by $139. So cha-ching, 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 nickel and diamond, everybody. This is on top of everything else that came out of this last awful 2025 legislative session.
So do you know who this affects the most? Not those wealthy business owners. Those evil corporations. This affects the mom and pop, the people that are living paycheck to paycheck, the people that are struggling to get by. Yeah, just let's add some expense to those people because guess what? They drive to work, so they need to have a car. They tend to have less than most reliable transportation, so maybe they need to buy, you know, another used vehicle down the road, and they can pay all these registration fees and everything else. You really think that Phil Knight is worried about a registration fee increase?
No, he's not. Not at all. And the thing is what's frustrating, too, is that throughout the whole session, Republicans were presenting options and other ideas. And they were, you know, there. But they were summarily dismissed, patted on the head, you know, go away. We don't need you. And so you really see 30 years of one party rule and what it looks like in this state. House Minority Leader Christine Drazen has proposed an alternative. Instead of raising taxes and fees on Oregon motorists, the legislature could use emergency funds from the Legislative Emergency Board. Hundreds of millions of dollars are set aside every legislative session for use in an emergency. Using emergency funds would not raise the gas tax and could fund ODOT until the 2026 session when a working solution could be found. But that would mean being reasonable and working across the aisle and trying to solve the problem with the, you know, to the benefit of the constituents.
Well, see, my challenge is this. $350 million deficit in ODOT. What was the school district? It was like $200 million deficit, maybe even more. And I sit here and go, why prior to 2020 we never had these six-figure, seven, eight, nine-figure deficits? And now all of a sudden we do.
Where's the money going?
And how much free money was handed out during those COVID years that instead of being a one-time, you know, to soften the blow of COVID, they were put into a program of, well, we can do this long-term and the taxpayers will just pay on the other end.
Yeah. COVID. Just hellish. So Oregon it has the fourth highest gas prices in the nation. I wonder who has the most. Washington's are pretty high.
Washington's, California, and I think Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. Well, Hawaii
I can understand it.
but not the other states. So basically just stating that it should not be, this should not be, raising taxes should not be on there. And really, again, this just feels really punitive. And again, you're seeing the numbers. Oregon right now stands to lose a congressional seat because people are getting the hell out of the state.
Yeah. And I just sit here and I go, you know, when the gas prices skyrocket, what is the first thing and the easiest way for states to relieve the burden on their citizens is to lower or even temporarily eliminate. And states did that the last time gas prices skyrocketed.
I remember when we still had the other governor.
Mm-hmm.
And people were imploring her during COVID to do that. Nope, not going to do it. Give people some relief. No. It's not about the people. It's just not.
No, and that's the challenge, and that's why Oregon is ranked so low on the list, because it's become blatantly obvious that the state of Oregon is not about the people that live here, work here.
No.
Survive
here, which are becoming less and less. So this really is, you know, gird your loins, Katie, bar the door. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Today's the 18th, so mm-hmm. What?
11 days.
11 days before this hits?
Something like that. Well, and I just sit here and I go, yeah, they're choosing a holiday weekend the end of summertime to do this thing. And I just go, it is so blatantly obvious. This is a punishment for everybody from you know, the average citizen to the lawmaker for not giving what was wanted at the time.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll tackle, you know, not calling ice cubes ice anymore because people are triggered. Maybe they'll have something in there for, you know, causing them frozen cubes. Let's call them frozen cubes instead of ice, because apparently that's triggering some precious ponies can't handle it.
I'm going to have to return my refrigerator because it says, you know, ice maker on it. You know, I think that being up in Seattle, I did see some advertisement from the Emerald Queen Casino about vanilla ice there. Vanilla frozen cube.
Come on now, get with the program.
Vanilla drink chiller. I don't know, what do you want to call him?
He's going to have to rework that whole song.
That's right.
All right, everybody, that's it for us today. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.